This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us delivering powerful, meaningful, and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation, and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings, and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
What's your view? Let us know by sending us a text 0427 Joy949 or on Twitter at SatMagJoy949.
You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9 with Macca and Tass. And again, I want to thank members, volunteers, sponsors and supporters who donated, who renewed their membership and also donated money in some cases as well. We've had a very successful radiothon and it's all down to every single one of you who donated to Joy or became a member of Joy. So thank you. Who's our next guest, Tass? Who I actually think might be a member.
Oh, well, we'll ask.
Well, I'm sure. Let's do that.
Our next guest, of course, is Harriet Shing, who's a Parliamentary Secretary in the Victorian Parliament. Good morning to you, Harriet.
Good morning. Hello to you both. And, yes, proud member of Joy.
There you go, Macca. We didn't even need to ask the question.
I thought that was the case. And you know, Harriet, this radiothon, we actually have ended up with more members of Parliament as members, federal and state, than we've ever had before. And that's across both sides of the House and also the crossbench.
What a wonderful outcome that is. And now just to make sure that it translates into more awareness and more engagement in matters that directly affect our communities as far as legislation goes and as far as commentary in the House goes, because I think if we can get those things to match up, then we will have achieved an awful lot.
That's a noble ambition, Harriet, but I've got one totally irrelevant question I want to ask you first.
I know what this is about.
Do you have greyhounds, Harriet?
Yes. I have greyhounds who are very lazy and spend all of their time upside down on the couch, and a whippet I got a whippet thinking that I would be one of those people who turned out looking like a dog, like their owner, and I've just ended up with a really fat whippet. I've got a terrier and I've got two miniature donkeys.
Jeez, you've got a whole menagerie.
Two miniature donkeys.
Yes.
Well, I've got a greyhound, and I think they're wonderful.
I know.
Whippets, you know, donkeys I'm not so sure of.
Donkeys probably aren't so sure of you either.
No, but then again, you are in Parliament, so they're probably familiar to you.
Oh. Well, no, I actually think that if we could have animals of the calibre of donkeys in Parliament, then I would be very, very pleased indeed. They are my favourite animal in the whole world, with dogs a very close second. So there's a lot of mythology around the donkey that probably needs to be dispelled, and we all know how it feels to be marginalised. So
yes,
I'm doing my best to actually educate the world about just how funny and smart and sensitive they are.
Great. Now, Tass went to a midsummer event last night, and the performers were, one of the things they were talking about, engaging the audience about, was the tough time that they'd had during COVID. And I know as Parliamentary Sec for Creative Industries, this is an area of particular interest for you and the government, that during COVID there was a lot of support, and some of that support actually came to Joy in terms of Joy TV, I thank you guys for that. Tell us about what that program, what it looked like, but what do you believe it actually achieved? Because these are people that really were doing it tough.
Yes, what we had seen during COVID and during restrictions was often a series of circumstances for people in our communities which culminated in enormous trauma and stress, and often revived a lot of historical trauma and distress as well. So the inability for people to move around and the inability for people to have their own space and to live in the way that works for them and defines who they are was in many instances really, really curtailed. A and that became a huge problem, particularly for people who were not yet out to their families or who were encountering violence based around their identities, people who were not able to access support programs or assistance that they needed and that they deserve to be and to remain healthy and included. And a lot of dignity was compromised during the pandemic for many cohorts and many minority groups, but for our communities in particular. And there's a lot that we need to do to try to address that and to recognise it, but also to continue to deal with it and support it over time. And if we take the analogy of the pandemic being like a bushfire, there are always scars after a major bushfire that lasts for years and years, and the pandemic will be no different.
It was very emotional last night listening to these performers, Jamie and Justin, talk about their experience during COVID lockdown, where they essentially had no income for 12 months last year. Mm. And this show that they put on, that we saw, and it was the second night, was the first time that they'd been on a stage performing in front of an audience for over a year. And how gratifying it was for them, and how positive it was for them they managed to survive this scenario of no income. In fact, young Jamie did say a couple of times, it was Justin who said a couple of times, there were many times that he kept on saying, I wished I'd listened to my parents and not become a performer.
Oh no, isn't that devastating?
Yeah, it was.
It's been such a difficult time as well for people in the creative industries, for in the performing arts, for everyone from technicians through to promoters, through to roadies, through to people on the stages, to those who write and create performative art, to have those opportunities to earn a living through creative arts, which is a huge contributor to our state economy. So let's not talk about it as being a charity sector at all, because it contributes and punches well above its weight. But to find that the support that was needed wasn't made available. I mean, I think there was a great song and dance with Guy Sebastian and Scott Morrison around a record investment. I think it was $250 million being promised to the creative arts, which never got handed out. And then we saw various problems with eligibility for JobKeeper and JobSeeker within the creative arts, and now we see those assistance packages coming off for those people who could get them. So there's so much work to do in reviving the creative arts and attendance-based opportunities for audiences, which translates into ticket sales, which translates into more gigs and money into the pockets of creators and artists. But also we need to make sure we're incorporating pandemic response into the creative industries packages that we're developing. And I've been working really hard with Creative Victoria alongside the stakeholders. We've had dozens of roundtables around what support looks like as part of the Creative State 2 and how we assist people in the course of the budget in a way that's going to be meaningful for creators just like Jamie and Justin.
I like the fact, Harriet, how closely the state government has worked with the City of Melbourne and, you know, other councils, whether that's around the provision and the facilitation of outdoor dining, but also in the creative industries, how closely the government has worked with the City of Melbourne particularly. I think that's a real template for, you know, how those two levels of government can work together. So I want to congratulate the government, but also the City of Melbourne. They've worked really closely, you know, and particularly, you know, led by Sally Capp, you know, to make this happen. I think one of the challenges here is that particularly venues, it's not just the performers, the venues have done it tough. And, you know, without performers, without shows, the venues don't get used, the bills continue on, you know, so many of them. There you go, there's some of your fans.
Can you hear my cheer squad? Everyone,
yes.
I can't hear the donkeys though.
You start to hear braying, I will definitely give you a heads up. It sounds like a symphonic foghorn, but we'll wait and see if that arrives. Stage left.
So in terms of the actual, the facilities, the buildings, has there been, what assistance has there been there
The venues have been a really big part of the engagement that we've been doing. There are various campaigns that have been running at a community level, not just within the city of Melbourne, but right out through to the western suburbs and around to the north, where we know that there are very large parts of the community that rely upon venue-based income and ticket sales in supporting large groups of artists who live within those communities. I'm thinking Footscray and Northcote and around to the areas in the north of Melbourne, which again are very strongly creative. And this is where we need to almost wait for the holy trinity of stars to align on the quarantine program being able to accommodate greater numbers of people coming through it, and it, notwithstanding the latest events around flights from India, that as we begin to open our borders again, that our quarantine systems around Australia can cope, and that's across all states and territories. We also need to make sure that the vaccination program is rolled out consistently, and there have been a few challenges there which are well canvassed around the intersection between AstraZeneca and specific health impacts. And we also need to make sure that there is a greater incentive for people whose discretionary income may have been affected to be able to get out and to see shows, so that we can in fact get people into venues. But we've got a whole lot of challenges around how we encourage venues to all be doing the right thing around QR codes and around checking in of all patrons, so we can do contact tracing and maintain that effort of traceability, so that as we continue to open things up, we've got that. But also to support venues of all different shapes and sizes, from the very big ones through to the very small ones. And I know it's really hard at the moment. We've got changes to restrictions, which mean you can have up to 100 people in your house, but for many venues, the number that you can have there around non-seated patrons is much, much smaller. And that's really tough for a lot of venues, so we need to make sure we're assisting them in the ways that work best for them, and we're continuing to work through options in the lead-up to the state budget.
That's great. Can I ask, Harriet, it's not specifically related to the creative industries, but Anzac Day tomorrow.
Yes.
Why is there a fence around the shrine? Do you know?
No, I don't. I don't actually know. I couldn't give you an answer that wouldn't be just about speculation from my end of things.
No, that's okay. I don't know. I don't know either.
Yeah. I don't know. It could be a measure of protection for the shrine itself. It could be around distancing arrangements that exist for the purposes of Anzac Day and the march. It could be for the purposes of enabling broadcasting to happen just inside that fence. I don't know.
We'll investigate those.
It could be to keep the greyhounds out.
Well, I will stay tuned. We know that, actually, just on that, animals of war have been a huge part of commemorative efforts, and we know that dogs and horses and donkeys, so I'm not going to leave the donkeys out of this, have played an enormously important role, not just in the services that they've provided, but and that's everything from bomb detection through to search and detect for wounded and injured soldiers, but also transportation, morale, the assistance of injured soldiers. It's nothing short of miraculous what our animals do. So big shout out to all of our animals of war as well.
Now, Harry, we need to take a short break.
Yeah, you
but
need
before
to,
we do
you need
that,
to stay with us. And we've actually got a message from
Yeah, we listener. Have. Are you going to read it out or shall I?
It's an admirer, I think.
Ooh!
I love Harriet's wit. It's quick and smart without being disparaging or nasty. Classy politician.
There you go. You have a fan out there.
Thank you, fans, and I think exactly the same of you.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Macca and Tass, we are speaking with Harriet Shing, who is a parliamentary secretary for many portfolios, as well as the custodian of a menagerie of animals.
Yes, there you go.
No, I'm not the custodian. I'm the slave human to the menagerie.
Right. Slave human.
Yes, because you only exist to ensure they get fed. That's all they think, and walked.
That's right. It's the lack of opposable thumbs, which means that they keep me around, and I'm blessed for it.
Yeah.
Now, Harry, clearly you've got a new set of portfolios. You now have creative arts and also water.
Water, yeah.
Yeah. You've lost mental health, but you've retained equality, and we're really pleased that you've retained equality.
Yeah, where'd you leave mental health? Where'd that go? You lost
I'll never stop being a huge supporter of mental health initiatives that lean into the stigma that exists around mental health and mental illness. And just a quick aside, one in five Victorians will live with and manage mental health and mental illness. I'm one of those Victorians. One in two Victorians will experience mental illness at some point in their lives. So I worked really hard on the Mental Health Royal Commission work and co-chaired the Ministerial Advisory Committee, including alongside wonderful contributors like Brenda Appleton, to make sure that our voices were heard. And now I've got my colleague, the wonderful Steve Demopoulos, who has taken that parliamentary secretary role and is working really hard on implementation of those 65 recommendations. But water is now my jam, as it were. It's something which I'm really keen to continue getting into, not just from a regional, from a metropolitan perspective around the water grid and what water security looks like, not just for residents, but for our waterways, for sustainability and for traditional owners, entitlements and access, but also regionally as we head through challenges around the Murray-Darling Basin up toward New South Wales and irrigation districts around to the north and to the east, as well as the desalination plant, which many people think we haven't turned on, but
it's been doing its job.
It's been pumping it out.
It's been doing its job. Now, Harriet, back to equality. Equality. We're on the back of the conversion practices legislation. Now, that was a bit of a tough grind for some people. I presume more so in the upper house than it was in the lower house, where you are a member of. Tell us about your experience there. How was the debate for you?
It was such a tough debate. It was such a tough debate in the lead up to the upper house's consideration of this bill. There were amendments being proposed by the opposition to stall the legislation until further consultation could take place. The bottom line, as I said in my speech, is that it's never going to be good enough for those who oppose the idea of regulating and banning certain practices where there might be an interpretation for specific religious groups and religious voices of concerns around the state's reach into those practices. It was a really devastatingly emotional bill, for those in the community who were following along, where rights and experiences and trauma were being expressed, but also really devastatingly in a couple of cases around people's contributions in the House being ignored and being mocked as well. And that was hugely traumatic. I got to my feet and got very emotional about the point of shame and what it means to live with the aggregate of shame that we experience through rejection and through discrimination, through vilification, and the importance of our laws doing everything possible to address shame and to turn it into pride. We had an interesting conclusion to my contribution where, in fact, it was one of your previous guests, David Davis, when I was reading out the names of people from the lower house who did not confirm positive support for the bill. In fact, took points of order and wasted the time that I had available on technical objections, which he knew. He's been in the parliament for a very long time. He knows how the standing orders work, which he knew would not get up. And then denied me leave to continue to finish my contribution and to use the time that had been taken up. So it's one thing to stand in support of a bill and to preserve your right to march at Pride. It's another thing entirely in terms of your actions not measuring up to positively stand for law reform that makes a huge difference to our communities. And so there was a lot of grief attached to that, not just for me, but for other people in the chamber for whom this is deeply personal. And I'm thinking of Andy Medic in that regard. We got through it convincingly, but some dirty politics and some really grubby politics along the way, which was not only unnecessary, but really, really hurtful.
So I think some of that, Harriet, was a case of grandstanding under gaslight. You know, they were gaslighting and they were grandstanding at the same time. Mm. They knew that their amendments would not generate support, and that doesn't mean you shouldn't put them, right? But they knew there was no support for them. And all they were doing was just, they were wasting time.
Well, if you think about the amendments themselves, and I always in politics like to wonder not just what people are doing, but why.
Mm.
The why in this, I would speculate, I would hazard a guess that it's because of internal stakeholders within conservative politics who would be saying and have said publicly on the record that the bill isn't good enough, that more time is needed, that more consultation is needed, that there are unintended consequences for the bill that need to be addressed so as not to trample the rights of religious organisations. I suspect that that was the rationale behind putting those amendments, and that's in fact what we saw in the lower house. The coalition leader, Michael O'Brien, had signalled over the summer break before this bill came to the upper house that they would be considering their position after the bill was passed in the lower house without amendment. And they still put the amendments, and that you're right, they knew that they wouldn't get up, but if you think about the why of it, I suspect it was to satisfy internal stakeholders and to then be able to say, well, at least we tried.
Harriet,
and again, at great pain to people in our communities. Sorry, Todd.
No, that's all right. We're almost out of time, Harriet, and I just thought it'd be interesting to hear from you about what might be the next, you know, one or two or three hot issues that you'll be tackling in your portfolio as a parliamentary secretary for equality. So what can we expect? What can our community expect you to be championing in the next bit?
Well, my appetite for continuing with a path of positive reform for our communities remains unflaked, unabated. Unflaked isn't even a word, I don't think. But,
it doesn't matter. We know what you mean.
I'm riffing on the vocab that I have. So I'm co-chairing the Education Task Force within Equality, plus the Health and Human Services Task Force, plus the Justice Working Group as part of the overall equality commitments to investigate where we can make change. I hear loud and clear and really do support looking very closely at the Equal Opportunity Act and to amendments to that act. I'm also really keen to make sure that we're continuing to look at government service contracts and at funding arrangements where there may be direct or inadvertent discrimination. And I'm also looking forward to continuing with championing the impact of positive reforms like the Rainbow Door, like the work that we're doing with partners such as Switchboard and Thorn Harbour Health in the mental health space as we implement the recommendations of the Royal Commission, alongside issues that continue to press us around education, respectful relationships, consent, the Safe Schools Program, which I was the ambassador for in the last Parliament. There is so much work to do, and we have an army of people championing these causes. My job's to be the conduit for
that. Can I add one other thing to your list? Can I add one other matter to your list?
But can I just say, it should be the Equal Opportunity Act. Equal.
Yes.
No,
absolutely. I won't accept continuing allowance of discrimination by religious institutions against our community who receive funding. My taxes get paid for them to discriminate against my community. It needs to stop.
And Harriet, if I can add one other matter to your list, it's been raised to us a number of times by our commentators and guests that we've had in this very studio on this very show. The recent Royal Commission into Aged Care actually was silent on issues relating to our community.
Yeah.
Completely
it's
silent.
Devastating, isn't it?
Completely silent. So if I can add that to your list of things that you need to work on, that'd be great.
Now,
aged care, absolutely. That's a huge issue and a federal issue that we need to make our voices clear on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we can't rely on Senator Coldbed.
Well, I'd say it's a long list. So
it is.
With it. Yes.
Harriet, thank you for your time.
We are going to have to go, and we just got a little wave through the studio window from a fellow upper house member of yours, Fiona Patton,
Fiona,
Fiona is going to be joining us in the studio in just a minute. And I expect you're probably going to be crossing swords with her over a bill that the government wants her to support around road use charging for electric vehicles. So you might want to stay on and keep listening. You might get a bit of a better idea where she's coming from.
Joy is a constant presence in my household, I assure you. So I'm looking forward to continuing that.
Thank you.
Continuing that conversation. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.